Well, you're doing a fine job.
Well, welcome everybody to this public hearing of the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization. I appreciate you turning out tonight. This is the ninth field visit that the committee has taken across the state, and it's a joint House and Senate committee, so it's a fairly large committee. And our intent and our direction from the legislative leadership is to go out and listen to the people in the district or in the various parts of Oregon and find out what it is that you want out of the transportation system and, frankly, how you would like to pay for it. Our visits to date, we followed a format of going out and visiting with the local ACTS, that's the Transportation Advisory Committee that represent the regions in the state, usually taking a tour of the area, which we did today. We had a very nice tour by folks from Hillsboro, specifically of this area and the growth and problems that you're facing. And then we met with the ACT here for about 2 hours and discussed the various transportation projects from Tillamook and Clatsmouth all the way into Washington, the western part of Washington County. So pretty good information today. This evening, what we're looking for is just as many people who would like to address the committee and share your views with us. We've asked that people sign up, and if you haven't signed up and want to speak, there's a table just outside the door, a staff person there, so please do that. We'll take people in order tonight as they signed up, and roughly we're asked that you take about 3 minutes apiece, to do that. That'll get us through the 2 hours that we've scheduled and give everybody a chance to share their thoughts with the committee. With that, I think we will start with an introduction. I am Lee Beyer. I'm the state senator from Central Linn and Lane counties, and I'm the co-chair of this committee. And we'll start on the far end then.
Thank you. I'm Chuck Riley. This is my Senate district. I'm the senator for Hillsboro, Corneas, Forest Grove, North Plains, and lots of farmland in between.
And I am Representative Barbara Smith Warner. I serve on the Joint Transportation Committee, and I have the honor to represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose.
I'll use my high school teacher voice. I'm Rod Monroe. District 24 is in mid-Portland and northern Clackamas County, and I have a long experience in transportation-related issues, dating back to many years on the Metro Council. I also have been an educator for 50 years.
I'm Jackie Winters. I'm State Senator of District 10, which includes South Salem, West Salem, Almsville, Turner, and Monmouth and Independence.
I'm Betsy Johnson. I have the privilege of being the state senator from District 16, North Tillamook County, Clatsop, Columbia, Multnomah down in the working waterfront, Washington County, Bethany, Banks, and Gaston.
Brian Boquist, Senator District 12. I'm from the fields out that door all the way to the Lane County line.
I am Representative Kathy McHugh, and I represent House District 9 down on the South Coast. I have portions of Coos, Douglas, Lane, and Lincoln counties, Coos Bay, Reedsport, Florence, Yahats, Mapleton, Deadwood, Swiss Home, Wells Creek, three community colleges, four ports, and I'm honored to co-chair this committee.
I'm a state representative, Cliff Benz. I represent about a third of the state. Found within that one third is Burns, John Day, Ontario, Baker City, and the best part of Lakeview, and I see two of my constituents here from Adel, which is an awfully long drive. Welcome.
My name is John Lively. I'm state representative from House District 12, which is the city of Springfield.
Hello, my name is Susan McLean. I live in Forest Grove, and I've lived in this area and House District 29, which I represent, since 1975, and I've been a school teacher in this area for about 42 years plus.
My name is Erin Seiler. I'm committee staff, filling in for the absent Patrick Brennan, who has been staffing this committee and has really enjoyed it, but his son is starting school at Southern Oregon University, so he has made the trip down there to get him all set up for today. So thank you for letting me join you.
Alrighty, so we're going to start with Mayor Wiley, Mayor Doyle, and Commissioner Dyke. I apologize in advance if I mess up anybody's name, but and the red light is on up, or the light is on up here, and at 3 minutes it'll turn red. Welcome.
Welcome, and welcome. Certainly welcome again to the group that I got the chance to spend some time with this afternoon, and certainly good evening and welcome on behalf of the City Council and the City of Hillsboro. Thank you very much for being here tonight. This is an important meeting, and we value your time, certainly. I guess I could honor the red, green, and yellow thing just like my constituents do, and that they just blow right through that, but I won't. I'll try that. As you heard today, Hillsboro is certainly a rapidly growing city. We are the fifth largest city in Oregon at this point in time, and we anticipate that over the next 15 to 20 years, with the addition of South Hillsboro and other residential areas, that we will probably overtake Gresham as the fourth place. I've already, as I said today, I've notified Mayor Bemis, and he doesn't believe me, but that's okay. We have, for the most part, we have fostered our improvements in the city of Hillsboro, and we certainly base our economic development successes on the fact that we have invested a lot of our own money, ours and the county's ODOT's, into the transportation infrastructure, which quite frankly is the backbone of our economy. And we've done this by partnering with our private sector as well through the transportation development tax, the TDT as we refer to it, as well as a tax that was passed by the voters many years ago called the Major Streets Transportation Improvement Program. We refer to it as MSTIP. This program has funded over 130 multimodal projects throughout Washington County over the last two decades, and certainly has improved a number of our roads and helped us to maintain them for the significant increase in population that we've enjoyed. We have, with this economic increase, we've certainly put more demands on our transportation system. We realize that, and we are constantly looking for ways that we can keep our transportation program up to speed and identifying the areas that are most critical at this point in time. Hillsboro right now is second only to Portland within the region when it comes to an imported workforce. As you heard today, 51,000 people come into our city every day, 29,000 people leave our city, total 80,000 people on our streets and highways. That's a significant demand and difficult to maintain. So what we've been working on, of course, is identifying where those particular critical points are. Highways 26 and 217 are certainly a major part of that, and we're looking forward to how we can identify areas to improve those. And then lastly is, a few years ago, legislature approved a $1.5 million to do a Washington County transportation study, which I am the co-chair of. We will be bringing that to conclusion later this year or early next year, and we will be happy to identify where we think those priorities are for where we spend our transportation money over the next 10 years. I know one of Betsy's fine best parts is Cornelius Pass. That is certainly a critical part for us to be focusing our transportation needs on. So in closing, I want to say thank you very much. This has been a huge commitment for you. You've been on the road a lot. We want to say thank you very much for not only your commitment to transportation, but for coming to Hillsboro and being here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Jerry. Co-chairs Byron McEwen, members of the Joint Committee on Transportation, Preservation, and Modernization. I just wanted to say that out loud one time. For the record, I'm Danny Doyle, mayor of the city of Beaverton. And first of all, may I add our thanks from our community for all the work you've done in traveling and seeing our glorious state. I look forward to doing the same thing as league president next year. And I'm pleased to welcome you to our area. As mayor of Beaverton, I urge you to pass a big, robust, let's just say perhaps a $1 billion transportation package this coming session. And we'll figure out a way to help you pay for that. I realize that even a package that large won't come close to taking care of the statewide need, but will allow us to make some of the investments that can keep our families safe, our communities livable, and our businesses strong. Let me briefly paint the picture of what a transportation package could help address in Beaverton, a city of nearly 100,000. Number one, safe routes to schools. Each day in the school year, there are kids walking along busy Menland Street, which currently needs $1.6 million worth of sidewalks put in. Beaverton has earmarked $500,000 from our general fund, but complete funding of sidewalks on this street would mean cutting 9 police officers out of our staff or eliminating 9 librarians, along with a third of the city's annual book budget. So those are the choices we have to make, and help in that regard would be great. Transportation package can help us make the statewide investments that keep our communities safe and continue to let us provide essential local services. More housing. We know there is a desperate need for a lot of new housing, but we won't get the full 3,500 unit development potential our infrastructure can otherwise support in the new South Cooper Mountain development without transit service. Let me underscore that. We have the water and sewer infrastructure, as well as the road, to support dense family housing, but Shoals Ferry Road is at capacity, and regional demand for transit service far outstrips the ability to provide it. A transportation package that increases investments in transit capital and operation will help meet Oregon's growing housing needs, connect housing and employment areas. Dependable freight shipping. Access to the Denny Road Industrial Park is limited to a city-owned access road, which crosses over Fano Creek. Unfortunately, when Fano Creek overflows its banks approximately a dozen times a year, that road is unusable and cut off, and the access is no longer there. The bridge there is also wearing out, and weight restrictions will likely be enforced within the next 5 to 10 years, further jeopardizing the viability of a 21-acre industrial park. This is a great site with direct access to 217, but the park currently for sale is just 50% leased because of the ongoing difficulties. A transportation package that invests in strong employment-serving bridges helps secure goods are moved, helps to ensure that goods are moved efficiently throughout the region, and our critical industrial land is providing maximum employment. Beaverton has put a high priority on road maintenance, and we're working hard to keep up with our existing resources. But there is a significant need from state funding to help us do that. So in closing, I know we have to work together for this transportation package. I know it won't be easy. So here's best of luck as you proceed down that path. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, I'm Andy Dyke. I'm the chair of the Washington County Board of Commissioners. And first of all, welcome to Washington County. Whether you stayed overnight or whether you came by TriMet or a road or drove a car, you probably got a range of transportation experiences. And that's what we're all about in Washington County. During today's tour, you had a chance to see the benefits of making transportation investments and what those benefits are capable of in securing our economic future, our access to schools, and the public safety of our citizens. Washington County citizens want an investment in a comprehensive transportation package that brings significant relief from congestion, provides expanded access to transit, and improves access to schools and neighborhoods. I think the message that that we're trying to deliver tonight is very simple, and that is that we'd like to see a significant game-changing investment in Oregon regarding transportation. We know that the investments must include all modes of transportation. They must focus on communities, economic stability and growth, and our future livability. And I'm confident that Washington County's residents will support a transportation package that can make a significant improvement in Oregon's transportation infrastructure. In Washington County, our transportation investment model focuses on transparency and partnerships with local governments, communities, and businesses to make the best decision that we can, given the resources available. We've learned from experience that if you provide transparency and build ownership in the outcome, you earn citizen support. Your conversation with Oregonians and the work from the Governor's Transportation Vision Panel helped provide some education. The next steps will be prioritizing projects so that the entire system benefits. Washington County is the only county in Oregon with a property tax-based funding tool known as the Major Streets Transportation Improvement Program, or MSTIP for short. I think most of you are familiar with that program. It was born out of three successful serial level levies passed in 1986, 89, and 91, in which we identified specific projects that would be constructed and put it out for a vote, and the public supported it multiple times. Over the last 20 years, MSTIP funded over 130 multimodal projects totaling in excess of $730 million. In October, we'll look at the next round. Tomorrow, our board is scheduled to approve a $30 vehicle registration fee. This ordinance will only go into effect if the state does not pass a comprehensive transportation plan. It's essentially a small insurance company, because it just doesn't make sense to let our investment fall apart while we wait for something better. So in conclusion, I would like to reiterate that we're very much in need of a comprehensive plan. And again, I thank you for your commitment, your service to Oregon, and your willingness to travel to Washington County for this afternoon to share with us your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Gentlemen. Okay, so the next three are Jason Tell, Norm Ralston, and Dave Honeycutt.
Ready? Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Jason Tell, and I'm the area manager for WSP Parsons Brinckerhoff, which is an infrastructure consulting company. I'm also on the board of ACEC, the American Council of Engineering Companies, Oregon chapter. First of all, thank you all very much, first of all, for being citizen legislators. It's a huge commitment you and your families make, and I really appreciate it. And secondly, for your time this evening. So I'll try to keep my comments brief. I'm not gonna talk about needs because a big part of what you're doing is going around the state and hearing about them, and you know they're large, so no need for me to add to that. I'm gonna focus my comments on a couple things. One, the urgency of action next year during the legislative session to try to encourage and support making it a meaningful package, assuming that one gets done, and I hope it is. And then lastly, to offer ACEC our help in supporting you and engaging the public in making that a successful effort next year. In terms of urgency, you've heard a lot about economic competitiveness, whether it's North Hillsboro and that industrial area here. We're competing against other states and other regions in the country and the world, and time's ticking and opportunities are being lost without action soon. Livability is another critical issue, whether that's safety, could be safe routes to school, could be that transit service for someone who relies on that to get to health care, really affects people's lives every day. And lastly, a sense of urgency in terms of costs. Right now, the taxpayer gets an incredible bargain when ODOT or another public agency spends a transportation dollar. The costs to build right now are extremely low. Borrowing is historically low, and no one knows how long that's going to last. So urge you to consider those when you go into session next year. I mentioned make it meaningful. I'm not sure exactly what the magic number is, but it's a tough vote to raise a fee, even if it's for a good cause and you can explain it. But I hope when you do think about it, do it in a way that you know when it's done, you will see maybe not congestion solved, maybe not the seismic problem completely gone, maybe not transit service everywhere to the degree people want, but it's at a level that the public can really see it and feel it, and you really have to do a pretty large package to make that be felt after you cover the whole state and all the different things that we've talked about need to be done. And lastly, I want to offer ACEC's help as a group. There's a lot of insight into how to deliver projects. Public agencies work closely with private companies to make that happen. Our companies can add some insight into that and maybe even draw upon prior experience, whether it's in Oregon or other states, about how you could deliver programs. And lastly, the group is really taking seriously the need to engage the public. So we're staffing up and gearing up and putting resources in to help engage the public to help them understand the need as well. So once again, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
I thank you also for your time and your late evening you're going to spend. You do have an advantage. We quit at 7 and the traffic will kind of let up then, so it ought to be a little easier getting home. I am Norman Ralston. I represent Northwest Hillsboro Alliance. It's roughly a 200-member owners or membership of the owners that own a section of Northwest Hillsboro, the landowners between Highway 26, Evergreen, Mackay Creek, and Jackson School Road. I'm also a business owner. I'm a partner in a company called Arrow Air. We're in the air ambulance business, so we service ambulances that have to put up with the traffic also. I've said quite a bit earlier about the connection between land use and transportation. I have with me Mr. Dave Honeycutt of Oregonians in Action, that he might say a little bit more and take some of my time to expand on what I've presented earlier. Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action. Excuse me. I noticed that none of you serve on the Land Use Committee on either the House or Senate side. That's not surprising. Most folks would rather rub a cow pie on their head and dance naked in the snow than serve on the Land Use Committee, but here we are. And I know this is a transportation issue, but you can't divorce the land use issues from the transportation issues. I think that's the point today. They're two sides of the same coin. And we have a situation with Mr. Ralston and a group over in North Hillsborough with land right next to what you folks in 2014 in the land use grand bargain have designated as the primary industrial area for the Portland metropolitan region, with land that's right next to that Mr. Ralston and his group have, that was designated by Metro as urban reserve land to serve as the housing supply for that area, that has now been redesignated as rural reserve land, which means it's off limits for development for the next 50 years, which really doesn't make any sense. The goal of the state's land use planning system, or one of the goals, is to try and provide walkable, bikeable communities where the jobs are next to the housing. We have a prime example here where we could make that happen, but unfortunately, the opposite happens. So we will be down at the Capitol in the next session trying to rectify that and trying to finish the reserve process that for the Clackamas and Multnomah counties as well, and get that done so that the region as a whole can move forward. You've got 111 people moving here every day, and we need to find places for them to go. And so it's time for the reserve process to get finished for all three counties, and time to rectify situations like the North Hillsborough property owners are experiencing. So with that, I thank you for your time, and thank you for coming out here to Washington County.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. Okay, so let's see, Mayor Olson and Councilor Harvey.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Dave Hagerberg. I chair the Yamhill County Parkway Committee, and we're involved, obviously, as you know, with the Newbert-Dundee Transportation Improvement Project. I'll just say a couple of brief introductory remarks before the testimony begins and save my comments to last, with your permission. But I thought it would be helpful if you had a map of the project so that when people testify, it will put it in perspective. And if you look at the map, you'll see that the part in red from Dundee going northeast to the Oregon 219 interchange, that is the part of the project that is currently under construction, and it is on ahead of schedule, under budget, and in fact the conversations are already beginning for the dedication of that facility in the fall of 2017, an enormous accomplishment due to the partnership of ODOT and an entire region. So with that, I would like to introduce Mayor Olson, who has now been elected as the Yamhill County Commissioner to start in January, and Commissioner Harvey, and Councilor Harvey, who is a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde.
Thank you, David, and I'd like to thank everybody for coming up to Hillsborough tonight and having a chance to listen to us again. I'm Rick Olson. I'm the mayor of the city of McMinnville, the new Yamhill County commissioner-elected Yamhill County, and I also serve on the board of directors of the League of Oregon Cities and the League of Oregon Cities Transportation Policy committee. You know, I'm going to take a little bit in a little while talking about the impacts to Yamhill County, but first of all, what I'd like to make sure is that I can have everybody understand that as we talk about the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, we're not talking about the cities in Yamhill County specifically and not talking about Yamhill County itself. What we're talking about is a very critical transportation corridor that links the metropolitan area, West Metropolitan area, to the Central Oregon coast. And that is from Link Highway 18 from McMinnville to Lincoln City and 99W from east of McMinnville to where it comes up to Rex Hill. And it's important for a couple reasons. And number one is because it's the major freight and transportation corridor that affects economic development in Lincoln County and the south parts of Tillamook County. But secondly, it's much more important, if you ask my own opinion, because of the potential problems with the Cascadia subduction zone quake. Highway 18 is the major evacuation arterial between the Central Oregon coast and the metropolitan area in the Willamette Valley. So I just wanted to make that aware. But now what I'd like to do is take a couple minutes to just touch about how significant this is. It's vital to Yamhill County's economic development, and specifically the cities of McMinnville, Dundee, and Newburgh, and of course, along with the Confederated Tribe of the Ground Round, which Denise will speak to, that we all came together several years ago to pledge a local match that allowed us to start phase one of the Newburgh-Dundee. Governing bodies, along with the Confederated Tribe of the Grand Round, raised by unanimous resolutions of the agencies, $20 million local match to actually entice the JTA money to spend $192 million to fund the first project. It's not very often that you see a lot coming together, but that did happen. We've been very fortunate in McMinnville to have a great city, but yet grid transportation gridlock is starting to impact us. We have a $68,000 new wine processing facility from Jackson Family Wines going on, a new four-star hotel resort, but the problem is we cannot get people to the West Valley and to McMinnville. So in summary, what I'd like to do is just really make sure that it can be completed on time and not 20 years from now, that the Newburgh-Dundee bypass and the whole bypass itself for the total economic vitality of the region and state, that be addressed through additional fundraising and allocation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you all for being here. And I'll make up for Rick's time there. I'll make this real quick. My name is Denise Harvey, and I'm an elected official for the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. As a Washington County resident, I've been a commuter for 14 years down that corridor. And for years, that corridor has exceeded the capacity. We stand in solidarity with our partners. Grand Ronde, while not required, also put in its own money into phase one, but phase one alone will not meet our transportation needs. Until the project is complete, we will continue to have transportation issues in the corridor. Phase two is important, and the tribe will continue to work with our partners. We are the largest employer in Polk County. We are also one of the top tourist destinations in the state of Oregon. This project for the Oregon economy is important for the state, Yamhill County, and Polk County. And I'd just like to say, from somebody who's been commuting that route for 14 years, it would be really nice to have that project completed and for all of our tourists and residents and other commuters. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next three then are Brett Baker, Sam Loki, and Chris Binney.
I kind of was on the last of the list. I made it complicated.
Sorry.
Senator, I apologize for the confusion.
Go ahead.
All right. Hey, thanks. It's an honor to be here today, and thank you all for your service. My name is Brett Baker. I am the president of Austin Industries. It's the holding company for the Austin Parish families in Newburgh, Oregon. Related companies the family owns are ADAC, the leading manufacturer of dental equipment in the world. We employ about 1,000 people at that business. They also own the Allison Inn and Spa, where we have about 250 employees. They have some other businesses that they own in the area. And also is the headquarters of the Family Foundation, for which they do all their philanthropy. The families lived in that region for about seven generations. Ken and the late Joanne Austin, the founders of ADAC, have been staunch proponents of the Newburgh-Dundee bypass for decades now. From the start, Ken and Joanne recognized, as we do now, that this section of Highway 99 is one of the most significant bottlenecks in the state affecting the safety of Oregonians, not to mention the quality of life of those living, working, and visiting the region. They also recognize the significant negative impact congestion has on commerce, which of course impacts the incomes of families in the area. We want to specifically acknowledge and thank and give thanks for the JTA funds for phase one and the fact that the OTC has recognized how critical it is to move forward on the right of way, on the acquisition of right of way for the entire corridor. We appreciate the hard work this committee has done and the hard work ahead for the legislature to craft a balanced and economical transportation package for the state. This project has already been prioritized with the construction of phase one. The hundreds of millions of dollars spent on phase one will not yield their full value without the construction of phase two. We urge the legislature to take that into account when prioritizing projects. As Ken and Joanne have done for decades, we stand ready to help in any way we can. Thank you.
Thank you. So now I'll get back on schedule, co-chairs and the committee. I wanted to point out a couple of things with respect to this project and the map. And as you see that part that goes from the Oregon 219 interchange to the East Newburgh interchange, that's what's talked about as phase two. If you don't build that, the project ends at 219. You have a city street to get to 99W, and even ODOT will tell you that in a very short time, that becomes total gridlock and you have a transportation disaster. What I would like to point out is in the support. Marion County commissioners are in favor of this. MWAC is in favor of this. You have a whole region that's in favor of this. Congress has put us in the FAST Act as a high priority corridor for this particular phase, and it is critical for this transportation project that it move forward. And I would tell you, I was in representing Bent's district yesterday morning in the southeast corner of the Oregon. So you have a huge state. We understand the importance of a broad-based transportation package for all of Oregon. In fact, when we came back, my wife would have been faster than 10 hours, but she wouldn't drive all the way. But it's a big state, and we understand that, and we will commit to support a big, robust transportation package for all of Oregon, not just the Newburgh-Dundee bypass. Thank you for your incredible donation of time and commitment.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, now we'll go to Sam, Loki, Chris Finney, and David Sale.
Hi, thanks for listening to us today. My name is Sam Lauk. I'm a retired engineer and I live in Washington County just outside of Beaverton on Cooper Mountain. And if you look at the map that's on the screen, you'll see River Terrace, South Cooper Mountain, and South Hillsboro all delineated there. Those are couple of large developments that are just kicking off right now. Myself and Fran Warren are on the board of the Cooper Mountain Southwest 175th Avenue Neighborhood Association. We formed 2 years ago when we saw this transportation issue starting to rise in our little neck of the woods. We represent 400 homes with residents who live along that boulevard or that street, and it's a rural road, basically, and it's the only path that we have to get to the outside world. There's no back streets, there's no other way to get out of there except along 175th. We've been communicating with members of this committee over the past several months via emails. We've sent, I think, five emails with our message in it. We've been talking to the Washington County Board of Commissioners and the County Land Use and Transportation Department. We've presented our issue to the Washington County Transportation Futures Study Advisory Committee. We've discussed our issues with our two Metro councilors that represent us. We've also been to Salem to meet with several of our senators and representatives. So Southwest 175th Avenue is a rural two-lane arterial. It's a county road that starts where the new South Cooper Mountain High School is being built right now at Shoals Ferry Road and goes north 2.5 miles straight over the top of Cooper Mountain. It's about 700 feet high at the top. On the north side of it, going down to towards Aloha, it has a 14% grade. There are 51 private driveways that empty out onto 175th. That's more than 20 per mile. And residents that are on the west side of the road have to run across the road to get their mail because the post office requires that the mailboxes be only on the one side. So the issue is these areas, we're building massive amounts of homes. I think the red boxes there represent a future of about 12,000 homes eventually. Where are the jobs for those homes? They're on these posters. They're up in North Hillsboro in the high-tech area up there. We don't have a way of getting up there. So what we're asking for is to support the transportation future study outcomes, particularly a north-south limited access road that goes from this area up to Hillsboro and can transfer those people. We need to somehow get our growth and transportation changes in concert with each other. Right now, it's like growth and it's like transportation, but we don't see any way of that being coordinated.
May I ask you, is this inside the urban growth boundary?
The South Cooper Mountain and River Terrace, I believe all those are inside the urban growth boundary now. But a lot of that area up in between the South Cooper Mountain and South Hillsboro is outside the urban growth boundary. And everything to the west, you can see where all the houses are now. You can almost tell where the urban growth boundary line goes by where the houses are on that map.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Christy Finney Dunn of Oregon and Southwest Washington's Families for Safe Streets. My son Dustin was killed and a 17-year-old boy was injured by a drunk driver in Portland in 2011. Thank you for meeting with us to help determine transportation needs. From my perspective, the Transportation Vision Panel has a glaring omission in priorities, and I ask that you bear with my emotions tonight. The missing priority is overall safety. Seismic safety is addressed, but what about the everyday safety of people in cars, on bikes, on foot, and in mobility devices? As of September 14th, 336 people have been killed in Oregon this year, up from 309 in the same period last year, an 8.9% increase. 2015 fatalities were up 28% over 2014. 5 Oregonians died this past weekend. Crashes can and do happen at any time to anyone, causing congestion, resulting in longer commute times, delays in freight delivery, and increasing greenhouse gas emissions, which were in the report that I read. But the most significant consequence of crashes is the devastation to families. Losing my son catapulted me into researching the when, where, why, and how of crashes. Roughly 100 people per day are killed on U.S. streets, and I hadn't even noticed till it happened to me. I saw the news, but nothing sank in. After hearing of a horrific crash, I'd feel bad a few seconds, and then I'd move on just like the news does. I didn't really believe anything would ever happen to our family until it did. I want safe streets for everyone, but the onus is on drivers because they cause the most damage, even to themselves. But many drivers think that behaviors not okay for other drivers are okay for them. Speeding, using phones, running lights, following too closely. I'm sure every driver who's crashed thought they had it all together too. I have come to the conclusion that people must be forced to drive more safely for their own good and that of others. Pleas for them to change fall on deaf ears. People changing would be the easiest, quickest, and cheapest way to attain safer streets, but they're not willing. So we must insist that our government make the changes necessary. More enforcement, safer infrastructure, and education. We must insist that our government acknowledge that our sons and daughters, parents, siblings, neighbors, co-workers matter most on our roads. Real people matter more than the movement of freight and commuters in the speediest way possible. But if we make our roads safer, those will improve too. It's been 5 long years since my son was killed by an unsafe driver. The many years I have ahead of me without him is an excruciating thought, but it's what keeps me motivated to hang on and continue speaking up, because it doesn't have to be this way. We don't want any more people qualifying for our Families for Safe Streets group. The safety of people must be a priority for any transportation package. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Members of the committee, thanks for your time this evening. Sir, could I get you to use the mic, please?
Again, thank you for all your time this evening, and I'm here to just reiterate a lot of what Christy said. My name's David Sale, and my daughter was killed by a TriMet bus driver in Portland on April 24, 2010. She and four of her friends were crossing the street in downtown Portland, and a TriMet bus made an illegal left-hand turn and ran them over in a crosswalk on a green light where they were meant to be seen. The driver then drove over them, backed over them, and ran them over again. The behaviors of that driver killed my daughter and another girl named Janae Hamill. Danielle Sale passed away on the 25th, about 20 minutes after midnight. Since that time, I've advocated for better driver behavior, better driver training, and many other distracted, visual barriers, all kinds of different causes for bus driver training throughout the United States since that time. There's over 1,500 companies that use our driver training program now, and thank you to Lane County, they use it, and there's Salem now uses our program as well. But we're here to make sure that you continue to keep safety as a priority in all your thinking when you're making all these rules, laws, and budgetary assignments. We ask that you also be transparent in letting us know where those dollars are being spent. And instead of just using safety as priority one in your wording, as TriMet does, we encourage you to actually make that true. Because I don't see a whole lot of verbiage in here about how much dollars are being spent towards safety, and I sure don't see a lot of verbiage in a lot of advocacy programs around speaking of where these dollars and budget items are going. So we need to be more specific on where those dollars are being spent, and we need to be more specific on how they're being spent. And I really appreciate the cities that are advocating for more of their transportation dollars as well. They're the ones that have to live in the nightmares that they live in their own little cities of transportation problems and gridlock and all that. So why don't we relinquish those dollars to those people that know more about their communities and problems than state legislators? So I ask that you consider everything that they've talked to you about, everything that Christie's talked to you about, when you're making these important decisions for the growth of these communities and the metropolitan area. Thank you.
Okay, let's see here. Next up is somebody else. Tom Messinger, my senator, Pacific City. And then, let's see, John O'Keefe and Bob Grover.
Go ahead. I'm a bigot. I'm a positive bigot. I'm in favor of Highway 6. Between Banks and Tillamook.
Could you please state your name, please?
I'm sorry. This is Tom Messinger. I'm from Pacific City. Highway 6 is kind of the stepchild of the four routes to the coast. It actually does get the least amount of traffic, but traffic continues to rise. But we have a 32-mile contiguous stretch of Highway 6 that has no cell service. We have one cam on all of Highway 6, excuse me, instead of multiple. And the one cam on Highway 6, the ODOT cam, is 1,000 feet below the top and 11 miles from the top of Highway 6. I would like to see that cam move to the top. I would like to see a lot of improvements. As these people talked about safety, that's really what the issue is. There needs to be more rumble strips, and there are going to be some, but I ask that you would make a lot more rumble strips on Highway 6. It will make it safer, okay? Part of what you want to know about is how can we fund ODOT? How can we fund ODOT? A couple, three things. One, electric vehicles probably need to have a straight charge at registration and every 2 years, because they don't buy gas. And that'll be true of any other kind of non-gasoline vehicle. They should have a charge, $50 every 2 years, whatever that right number is, they should have that charge. There should also be a charge for using a charging system like that is at Fred Meyer and lots of other places where you can go in and charge your car. There should be a charge for that. Trailers, the small trailers that people tow around behind their cars and their pickups, those are not licensed in Oregon, I believe, and I believe they should be, and have a charge for that. The state of Washington does that. I think the another thing that should be supported and encouraged to help with the transportation issues is encourage strong encouragement of telecommuting and having people work different sets of hours. That will take cars off the road during the rush hours. Okay. And I understand there's going to be a review of ODOT's practices and policies and procedures. I think that's a great idea. I'd like to see what comes out of that in the sense of a public announcement, and I'd like to see where ODOT ranks compared to the other state transportation organizations across the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Vice Co-Chairs and members of the committee. I'm John O'Keefe. I'm president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I came here today from Adel, Oregon, 9 miles from the Nevada line. There were closer hearings to me, but my schedule didn't allow me to get to them. But I do put a lot of time in on your highways, doing my duties as president of the Oregon Cattlemen. And I would, on behalf of the Oregon Cattlemen, like to make a few remarks. We certainly support good roads. We need to get our products to market, and we need to get to our schools and hospitals and things. We do live, many of us, I represent the whole state, but a lot of our members are in the less populated areas of the state, and we still need these roads. We spend a lot of time on them. Our members understand the value of good road maintenance, and I'm sure we'll be there to support a well-funded package. We do have a lot of concerns. We are people that sell commodities. We're price takers. We can't pass our costs on, so costs do affect our bottom line, and we're real concerned the gas, if we're going to fund, and we do believe that funding our roads through the gas tax probably is appropriate, but there's going to be a limit, and we are real concerned if we try to add other things to the cost of fuel, like low carbon programs, we're going to reach a limit, whether it's our people unable to be competitive and stay in business, or whether some group will address the issue by creating a ballot measure to limit costs and create problems for our road funding. I don't know, but we're real concerned how we'll get this done, but we do want to work with you and help you get it funded. So thanks for the opportunity to address the committee, and Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, Chairs Byers and McEwen and members of the committee. My name is Bob Grover, and I'm chair of the Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce and president of a landscape contracting business that has 225 employees and 75 trucks that get stuck in Portland metropolitan area traffic every day. Thank you for taking your time to be here in Hillsborough this evening and providing us an opportunity to have the businesses in our community have their voice in regarding our transportation needs and challenges. The Hillsborough Chamber works with businesses of all sizes and hears on a consistent basis about the challenges and difficulties they face with regards to our transportation system. Whether they are challenged with getting their goods to market or their employees to their workplace, it has definitely impacted most employers and employees in our region. I'm sure you have been exposed to many of the transportation issues and impediments here in the Hillsborough area today during your tour. The Hillsborough Chamber has prioritized many of those same projects, and I will take just a moment to review and talk about a few of them. TV highway safety and mobility improvements, Highway 219 improvements, the Century Boulevard Highway 26 overcrossing. This is a growing area of our city and community and has seen substantial increases in business development investment, and we need that to continue. US 26 widening Cornelius Pass Road to Brookwood Parkway. The Cornelius Pass Road safety improvements. These are extremely important projects to the chamber and the city and our business community. Highway 217 corridor improvements. These are not within our city, but would substantially impact and improve the congestion problems in and around Hillsborough. And finally, we are continually hearing from businesses that need to expand transit service in all areas of our community. I know you are most interested in hearing from individual business and community members on your tours, and we appreciate that you have afforded the Hillsborough Chamber an opportunity to come before you today. We have several business members with us here today that will speak. One of our major employers, Corvo, is not able to attend, but has asked that I provide this testimony on their behalf. This testimony is submitted by Rick Kroon, Senior Director of Corporate Services for Corvo. Quote, I would like to voice my transportation concerns with doing business in the Highway 26 corridor. Corvo is a global manufacturing company with approximately 770 employees working at its Hillsborough site. We operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and Corvo depends on efficient transportation of our goods and materials to and from our site in Hillsborough. Corvo's manufacturing process requires a long list of specific materials as well as standard consumables to maintain our operations. It is essential that these deliveries arrive on time as forecasted to avoid any business interruptions. Corvo also requires the transportation of our manufactured projects in Hillsborough to be sent outside of Oregon for final processing, and thus time to transport is essential in our manufacturing cycle. Delays in transportation of that product is in essence a delay in our manufacturing process. I'd also like to stress that the most critical element of our business success is our whole employees. If we cannot hire and retain exceptional talent, our business competitiveness is severely impacted. As I'm sure you all are aware, housing and rental costs in Portland and the Highway 26 corridor continue to escalate, forcing many individuals to live further away to seek more affordable housing. As this occurs, transportation to and from Hillsborough facility becomes more and more important to our employees. A route of growing importance is the Cornelius Pass route to Highway 30 to reach more affordable housing on the west side. This route has grown increasingly crowded, adding significantly to the employees' commute time and their dissatisfaction. As a final note, as a company, we are extremely concerned with the safety and wellness of our employees. Cornelius Pass is a heavily traveled two-lane highway and can be extremely dangerous to those frequenting its use. This can be a source of high stress to those who have to drive this route. Cornelius Pass is also very popular Highway 26 bypass route connecting vehicles to Highway 30 and then across the St. John's Bridge. Late afternoon rush hour traffic attempting to cross the St. John's Bridge can often have a backup of almost a mile on Highway 30. As a global employer, Corvo and its employees depend on safe and efficient transportation routes in the area where we do business. I encourage you to seriously look at transportation issues confronting all of us working and living in the Highway 26 corridor. The Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce hopes that the legislature develops and passes a large and comprehensive transportation bill that expands road capacity to support our local region's economic growth. Thank you for this opportunity to participate in the conversation with you today.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Next up is Keith Peel. Brian Medev, and let's see here, Craig Dirksen. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, good evening. My name is Keith Peel, and I am the immediate past chair of the board for the Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce, and also a vice president with Baker Rock Resources. I'd like to thank the members of the committee for taking time to visit with us tonight and for the opportunity to provide input. Passing a transportation package in the next legislative session is an absolute must. In the weeks and months you have traveled around the state, you have no doubt witnessed firsthand that our aging and antiquated infrastructure is in need of repair, preservation, expansion, and modernization. The timing to pass a transportation package could not be any more important than it is right now. With the recent passage of the Federal FAST Act and the bill's focus on improving freight mobility, the timing is right for effective multimodal expansion and congestion relief to some of our most critically congested freight corridors. The FAST Act allocates $4.5 billion over the next 5 years for freight-focused programs, along with $6.3 billion in formula funds for states to invest in the National Highway Freight Network. In certain cases, up to 80% allocation of project costs can be covered by federal dollars. Without passage of a comprehensive transportation package, we will undoubtedly miss opportunity to provide the match revenue. Our state's economic prosperity is key to maintaining our competitiveness and our standard of living. It is how we build strong communities and families. However, productivity, efficiency, economic growth is hampered in our region and our state from our lack of investment. The Federal Highway Administration states that for every dollar we invest in our infrastructure, we receive $2.40 of economic return. Our meeting tonight is an important step. We will not gain consensus from all on what we should do or how we should do it. But leadership is just that, finding the ability to move forward in the face of adversity and challenge. Passing a bill is not going to be easy, as it will take compromise and a willingness to work together. But I believe that when compromise and willingness do work together, we accomplish our best work, not just as legislators, but as Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon, co-chairs McEwen and Beyer, and members of the committee. My name is Craig Dirksen. I live in Tigard, and I serve as the elected Metro Councilor for District 3, which includes Southern Washington and Western Clackamas counties. I also chair JPAC, which is the Metropolitan Region's Transportation Committee. Transportation is a critical backbone that is essential to the economic vitality and quality of life for our region and our state. But our transportation needs and challenges are growing more and more acute. Our metropolitan region is growing currently at a rate of more than 110 people, or about 34 new households every day. That's a line of cars, new cars, 3 miles long, assuming that each family has one car. That increase is putting growing stress on our entire transportation system. This has led to a significant increase in congestion as well as severe impacts on safety. Our system isn't built to handle the number of people we now need to serve. Our region is working hard to address these challenges. JPAC recently approved a 3-year investment program of $130 million in flexible federal funds to support development of an interconnected set of 5 transportation projects that include the region's next 2 high-capacity transit projects, Southwest Corridor Light Rail and Division Street Bus Rapid Transit, as well as early investment in projects to address 3 major highway bottlenecks on state facilities, I-205, Highway 217, and Interstate 5 at the Rose Quarter. Taken together, these projects will help to relieve congestion and provide more reliable options for people in our region to get to work, to school, and to health care. Additionally, our region, cities, and counties are enacting local taxes and fees to address their maintenance backlogs and make improvements to their local streets and roads. So we're doing our part to address our own transportation needs, and we plan to do more as well. But the tools we have are not enough. No matter how successful we are at the regional level, we need your help. As you consider a 2017 transportation funding package, we urge you to follow these three principles. First, support both roads and transit. The 2009 Jobs and Transportation Act required our region to develop a plan for reducing greenhouse gas emissions from transportation to meet state targets. Our region embarked on this difficult process of building a climate smart strategy to reduce these emissions 20% by 2035. We've embraced that vision and are working now to implement it, but our single biggest need is for increased funding to make the necessary investments. A strategy for funding increased transit service should be a part of any 2017 legislative package. Second, partner with the region. We are addressing congestion by dedicating a significant ongoing stream of regional dollars for development of three major highway improvements on 205, 217, and I-5. As you've heard, congestion in our region is a statewide concern, and these state facilities are first and foremost ODOT responsibilities. But we stand ready to ask our voters to contribute to construction of these projects, but we will only succeed if the state has demonstrated its own commitment to building them. It is essential that you make a significant down payment toward construction of these projects with any state dollars raised in a 2017 package. And lastly, thirdly, we ask you to be bold. In your travels around Oregon, you've seen the magnitude of the need of investment statewide and have heard calls for billions of dollars of investment. While we understand that these needs cannot all be addressed in one fell swoop, we urge you to push the envelope and enact a funding measure consistent with the scale of the challenge that we face. Other states and metropolitan areas are enacting investment packages to address their transportation needs. Now is the time to pass a package that speaks to the aspirations of our communities and our state, rather than simply patching holes. Our investment must match our growth to ensure we can thrive while living up to our state's values around sustainability and equity. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I've included all this information in my written testimony. I'm happy to answer any additional questions you might have.
Thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. My name is Brian Meter. I'm a senior materials manager at Genentech in Hillsboro. I'm responsible for our distribution center operations there. Thank you for this opportunity to share Genentech's transportation challenges relative to our local infrastructure. Genentech, Hillsboro Technical Operations produces medicines in the biotechnology pharmaceutical space and operates what we refer to as a fill and finish facility. Essentially, this means that we produce medicine in final dosage form that you would see at a doctor's office, a clinic, or a hospital. We produce medicines for various forms of cancer, macular degeneration, rheumatoid arthritis, cystic fibrosis, various forms of pulmonary embolism. We distribute or produce 23 different product families out of the Hillsboro facility. 10 of those are manufactured at the facility itself. We ship product to most of the United States, and we share this distribution responsibility with the Genentech Distribution Center in Louisville, Kentucky. Roche has made a commitment. I didn't mention Roche is the Genentech is the wholly owned subsidiary of Roche. And Roche has made a commitment to the Hillsboro site in the form of capital investment of over $500 million. We currently employ about 450 people in a wide range of positions, ranging from entry level to senior professional and technical level employees. In addition to the 450 full-time regular and contract employees, the site also impacts the local economy through goods and services provided by other local businesses. So as others have mentioned, of increasing concern to Genentech is the Highway 26 corridor. We utilize FedEx and UPS to deliver product Monday through Friday to PDX, and we average about 4,000 to 6,000 parcels a month via this particular channel. Now, by most standards, that's not high volume, but by the nature of our product, the potential significant impact to patients when product does not arrive on time can be very significant. In the case of elderly patients who are likely dependent on securing transportation to a doctor's office for eye treatment, or in the case of very sick patients who may be in stage four cancer treatment, doing the same thing to come to a clinic for infusion of potentially life-saving cancer medication. Not having the product there is not an acceptable result for us. Since the distribution center began operations in July of 2008, we've seen a slow erosion of our allowable processing time to take orders and make next day shipments. Shortening our acceptance of orders to allow for UPS and FedEx to handle the 26 corridor traffic and make it to PDX in time to make their flights is the primary reason for that. And we associate that really with the increased growth, the business climate improvement in the area, not matched by the investment in the corridor, the Highway 26 corridor. So when product is not made, does not make it out in time, the time may not be significant in terms of processing, but it can in fact have a very real impact on how we service the medical community. And in addition to that, it does not meet the service level that's provided out of our Kentucky facility. This has in fact been a part of Genentech's recent conversations. We've been discussing our North America strategy and whether or not we should direct more business, particularly East Coast business, to the Hillsboro operation. Of particular concern would be growth and future growth in the area without corresponding infrastructure improvement and the impact that could have on adding to congestion and our ability to provide expected service levels. Very quickly, I also want to state that beyond the state of our roads, we would also like to see the state do whatever it can to encourage a business climate that would allow for PDX to be a hub for additional international flights. An increasing part of our business is what we refer to as rest of world shipments, whereby we ship product to other countries for further packaging to distribution in their regions and their countries. Currently, we have to ship to SeaTac or SFO for these shipments, and that represents additional risk over the road as well as additional transit time. And I should add that that same impact is felt for inbound materials to us as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. The next two from PCC are Sandra Fowler-Hill and Kathleen McMullen. And as you're coming forward, I will note that we've got about 20 people left, and so the quicker that you can make your comments, that'd be better. And if you happen to have written material, if you could summarize that and just turn it in, we'll make sure everybody gets it and gets into the record.
We'll be brief. Thank you so much, Co-Chairs Byron McEwen and members of the committee. I'm Sandra Fowler-Hill, the campus president at the Portland Community College Rock Creek campus. Portland Community College enrolled 78,803 students last year at its four campuses and seven centers. Those represented 740 different zip codes of students commuting to one of those campuses in the metro area, and 3,000 employees that live throughout the area. Here at Rock Creek, there's over 22,000 students attended this last year at our 185th and Springville Road campus, representing 372 different zip codes, traveling from all over the region to attend classes. 30% of these students also attend classes at one of the other campuses throughout the district. So traveling across the metro area is a great challenge. To get to the campus using public transportation, our own internal transportation, or their own car. We especially have challenges for students attending from the Forest Grove area in the western part of the campus to access education. We're building a new training center as part of the Oregon Manufacturing Innovation Center to be located in Scappoose, and very concerned about access when that campus opens in fall of 18 to be able to have students access this state-of-the-art training center throughout the region using Cornelius Pass, Highway 30, because those are pretty much the options available. And so I want to thank you for your efforts to provide access to education, training, and to jobs throughout the region.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm the district manager of transportation and parking for the entire district for Portland Community College. My name is Kathleen McMullen. And I would just really like to thank ODOT and much of the transportation industry here in the region, because one of the things that PCC is very committed to is sustainability and reducing single occupant vehicles. And at several of our campuses, we have very complete and high quality bicycle facilities. At Cascade and Southeast, we have bicycle trips approaching 15% of our total travel. We're at about 5% for our pedestrian trips. And we have about another 10 to 15% of our folks on transit. So we're looking at a 70% single occupant vehicle trip mode split, which I think is really excellent. In Washington County, we don't have the bicycle usage that we have in some of the other campuses because there is not a complete bicycle network. I would really like to thank, I'm very thankful for the funding that has been received to improve Springville Road, because that is going to include pedestrian and bicycle facilities and allow us to really push and try and get more folks on bicycles. I think one of the things that people don't realize is that being able to take a bike, being able to walk is really inexpensive, and this allows people to get an education that might not otherwise be able to afford it if they had to purchase a car. We also have a big commitment to transit and appreciate the transit service that we have. And in the future, as you're looking at these facilities, if you could continue to look at the bicycle, transit, and walking modes, I think that that would really help out our college as a whole and help us maintain our goal of sustainability. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies. Next up is Rob Drake, Devin Downey-Smith, and Jolene Singh. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Devin Downey-Smith. Good evening, Co-Chairs Beyer and McCune, members of the committee. I am a Forest Grove resident and lifelong Oregonian. Thank you for taking the time to conduct these hearings throughout the state, and especially to my representative, Susan McLean, and Senator Chuck Riley for participating in this committee. I'm a mother to a 9-month-old baby, and I'm very invested in this community in particular. And I hope to see us expand MAX service to Forest Grove or to adopt rapid bus transit. I hope that we can add electric charging stations throughout our city. Your support of tax incentives and subsidies for electric vehicles will make it easier for families like mine to get an EV that we could use as our Portland commuting car. And because of the Clean Electricity and Coal Transition Bill and Clean Fuels Program, soon enough, the electricity that we use to fuel our cars will come from cleaner sources. And I'd like to thank the members of this committee who voted for those bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd also like to comment on a service that we have in Forest Grove called GroveLink. It's a free bus service that picks people up around the city and takes them to other locations within Forest Grove. This is a great model for encouraging people to use the bus for shorter trips rather than driving. It helps create community while being a convenience in a city that is otherwise honestly designed for driving everywhere else, and I hope that other cities will consider the GroveLink model. Lastly, I want to say that I hope that we will fix the existing roads that we have before we consider building new ones. I appreciate, for example, the new roundabout that was just built outside of Forest Grove. When accidents happen out where I live, they are often fatal or severe, like the one that happened just last week off of Fern Hill Road, which is actually a road that I take every week when I drop my 9-month-old daughter off to my mother-in-law's house where she is cared for while I am at work. This roundabout is an example of an improvement to an existing road that makes traffic flow better and makes people slow down. So I want Forest Grove and our entire state to continue to embrace these kinds of safety improvements rather than building new roads. When I think about the future for my little baby, whose name is Diana, I want her to enjoy the same clean air and active childhood that I enjoyed in Southwest Portland. And I know that you guys have a really tough job ahead of you to hear all of this feedback and try and make it work with limited funds. But if you can do the tough job of making a people-focused transportation package that works for Oregon, please know that you will leave behind a great legacy, one that will matter to me, to my daughter that I'm raising, and to my elderly parents that I care for in Forest Grove. Thank you so much for listening.
Dear committee members, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Jolene Singh, and I live in Orenco Station. I rode my bicycle to school as a child, and I ride my bicycle to work every day today. I have gone through the same phase of teenage by graduating to motorbikes and cars, but I've completed a full circle to realize that riding my bicycle makes me happy and healthy. My perspectives today will be as a city commuter from outside the steel cage of cars, and I will group them into two categories, infrastructure and law enforcement. We should create car-free corridors connecting points across the cities where school children and adults can walk and ride their bicycles to school and work without causing their family an anxiety attack. We live in an age of fear, where fear of high-speed traffic on wide roads designed to pander to the motorists causes anxious parents to prefer to drive their kids to school. And after dropping them off late for work, the same parents zoom away, becoming the very traffic they feared. As a society, we buy our kids cars as soon as they can drive themselves because our roads are safer for cars than bicyclists. Then we jack up our trucks because trucks feel safer than small cars. Then we start widening our roads to accommodate all these extra cars. After all this, we complain our kids can't possibly ride their bikes because our wide roads are too scary and there are way too many cars on the road. And the cycle continues. We need to empower our children and seniors to be independent, safe and happy as they navigate themselves on safe routes instead of being chauffeured around, listening to my next Miley Cyrus. Regarding enforcement of traffic laws, I want to reiterate a point a previous speaker spoke. From 2014 to 2015, Oregon has seen the highest percentage increase in traffic fatalities in the United States. As I ride to work, I have too often been on the receiving end of cars willfully or through negligence clipping me at intersections. And I have been at literally an arm's length away from a 20-foot semi-truck as it blows past me at 50 miles per hour on Cornell. I have requested more speed enforcement and protected bicycle lanes, but in 3 years of biking in Hillsboro, I have never seen anyone get a ticket. After all, we have only 4 officers in the city manning traffic checks and events, and though we have money to beef up lanes on Baseline and Cornelius Pass, we don't seem to have enough to install speeding cameras and protected bicycle lanes. I recently read of a jogger who was killed by a negligent driver on Baseline Road. The driver stayed on the scene and no charges were filed. The only high power tool for which there are no charges for death by negligence is a car, not even a suspended license. We live in a city where a distracted driver can kill someone and be let off without a fine. But if a leaf blower gets leaves in your face, the poor chap cleaning the sidewalk could lose his job. And to summarize, I would like to see more protected bicycle lanes and safer routes for children and adults. And I would like to see stricter enforcement of the existing traffic laws. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Rob Drake, and I serve as city manager in the city of Cornelius. We're immediately west of Hillsboro, between Forest Grove and Hillsboro. And I'm here tonight representing our mayor and city council. The City of Cornelius supports the League of Oregon Cities 2017 Transportation Legislative Priorities Package and encourages the Oregon Legislature to pass a meaningful transportation package during the 2017 regular session. We encourage substantially increasing the state gas tax and licensing and registration fees. In addition, we support indexing the state gas tax. Construction costs continue to increase significantly, yet there is no funding mechanism to keep up with increasing construction costs. Lastly, the City of Cornelius also supports allowing for continued home rule authority for cities and counties by leaving open all funding options for local voters to choose how they will fund additional road and highway construction improvements and maintenance on a local basis. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next three are Kat Iverson, John Coulter, and I believe Dana McCulloch. Go ahead and start.
My name is Kat Iverson. I am a resident of Hillsboro. I'm a cyclist, but I am not here to advocate for more bicycling facilities. I actually dislike most of them. I'm here with a completely different suggestion, and one with a price you will like. It is completely free. I would like to see you repeal three discriminatory bicycling laws: the mandatory bike lane, mandatory side path, and far to right laws. That's how they're typically known across the country among bicyclists. Although in Oregon, they are actually in only two sections. The far to right law is on its own, and the mandatory bike lane and mandatory side path laws are combined in one. Two main reasons to repeal them are that, one, they encourage, if not actually require, hazardous riding, and two, they are mostly unenforceable. Edge hugging required by the far to right law and the position of most bike lanes is a fairly dangerous way to ride. It leaves a cyclist in where the debris accumulates. He's less visible to other drivers, and he's less able to see other drivers, especially on side streets. Puts him close to parked cars where he can be doored. The reason they are mostly unenforceable is there are actually exceptions to these laws, so that they don't exactly require hazardous riding. There are exceptions for all sorts of hazards, like debris, and just generally debris pretty much covers it all, and any hazards. But it's subjective. The question is if the bicyclist considers it hazardous and doesn't ride in the bike lane or close to the edge, what about the cop who stops him or the judge who fines him? These things have happened. So I would like to see them repealed because I think that cyclists need a legal way to ride in the manner they consider to be the safest. Having these unenforceable laws would be a lot like if Colorado passed a law concerning oceanfront property. Thank you for your having these traveling hearings.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You've got your testimony.
My name is Dana McCullough. I have been, I was born in Hillsboro, as was my great-grandfather. I have lived 42 years in an area that is now in the Northwest Hillsboro Alliance, and that is the area that to the north is bordered by Highway 26, to the east by Jackson School Road, to the west by Evergreen Road, and to the south by Evergreen Road, and to the west by the McKay Creek. Excuse my hoarse voice. All of what you're doing eventually filters down to livability, and as there's been a lot of testimony, safety. Our grandchildren's babysitter died not that long ago on Cornelius Pass Road. I have to travel it often, and I've traveled behind cars that say, "Pray for me." I drive Cornelius Pass Road. There was also a young man that was killed by the entryway to my property on Jackson School Road earlier this year, and it was mainly because there's nothing to warn people that somebody may turn or you can't see the people coming towards you because there's a dip in the road. A simple thing, but that road is now being inundated by traffic from Highway 26. It's especially a problem because on one side it's been designated urban and in the Hillsborough city limits, and on the other side it's been taken out of the urban reserve and put back into farm reserve, which is really poor planning. And the farmer wanted to come tonight and tell you the same thing and how difficult it is to strategize now when he takes his heavy equipment down that road. It's just not a place anymore that can afford to be designated farm. Earlier, it was said that land use planning is the other side of transportation planning, and that is oh so true. And too often we get a myopic look at everything. So I'm here asking you, please, to look ahead, because if that land, 1,800 acres in Northwest Hillsborough, were put back into the designation that Metro took 3.5 expensive years and lots of citizen input to put into urban planning, it should be that now. And incidentally, the property owners didn't even know it had been redesignated until it already had been, which is a pretty sad commentary on process and on citizen process. So what I would like from this committee is to take a bird's eye comprehensive look at that as it is on the ground now, where building is going sprawling all around Northwest Hillsborough out into areas that are North Plains and Banks, and also take a look into the future and realize that this land use planning really can help your road planning. If this area and that the largeness of it used for creative planning for great community, it could eliminate a lot of road widening, problems with overpasses, wear and tear on the roads. It would relieve Highway 26. It would relieve Cornelius Pass Road and give back to many people hours of their time that are now spent on roads. And so I would like to ask of the committee that in the 2017 legislature, they would be supportive and recommend that that land be returned to urban reserve. Thank you
very much.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you called my name, but I think maybe you did. My name is Dan McFarling. Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for your public service. I am a fifth-generation Oregonian and a resident of and volunteer in Washington County. We frequently hear government officials acknowledge that we cannot build our way out of congestion. Our state has appropriately identified carbon reduction as an important goal. But when proposals are brought forward, what we generally hear about are more proposed pavement that generates more traffic, more congestion, and an expanding carbon footprint. In order to address congestion in areas like Rose Corridor and Washington County, government officials have primarily proposed more pavement. Does anyone truly believe that spending $350 million in the Rose Corridor area will resolve congestion in that area? The Oregon Department of Energy concluded over two decades ago that there is no way our state can achieve an effective transportation system as long as our only source of dedicated transportation funds is dedicated to more pavement. Oregon needs a carbon tax, similar to what is working in British Columbia and similar to what has been proposed up in the state of Washington. We need an adequate and reliable source of revenue that allows elected officials to address transportation needs with the best alternative solutions. In some areas, that may be roads. Oregon needs to catch up with both California and Washington, states that are investing in effective transportation solutions, including improved intercity rail, both passenger and freight, and public transportation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's see here. Next up is John Coulter. I called the name before. Are you here? Don't see him, so we'll move on. Blaine Ackey, and Peter Trex, and Linda Heitz Claiborne. Apologize if I mispronounce your name.
Okay, thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee for your service. And I'd like to start out by saying also thank you for the improvements that you have made, that legislature has made. There are some tremendous improvements that I've just experienced recently. For example, Senator Johnson would agree with me. I think the improvements on Highway 30 have been tremendous, and the work that's being done, I think Senator Riley and Representative McLean would agree with me, the work that's being done on Cornelius Pass Road is excellent. And
excuse me, sir, could I get you to put your name on record, please?
Oh, yes, my name is Blaine Ackley, and I'm a 25-year resident here in Hillsborough, and primarily I want to speak to you today not from a corporate perspective, but from my own personal perspective of two incidents that happened this past week which spurred me to come to the meeting tonight. Number one is, as an avid bicyclist, I went to the Washington County Rural Roads Committee meeting to seek assistance about some rural roads that I use as a bicyclist, and I was informed that really Washington County is in a position right now where we don't have the money to maintain the roads we presently have. And so while they considered, they knew of the roads that I was seeking improvement over, but those roads were graded as a grade C, and they only can deal with roads that are rated as grade F or grade D. And so my improvements would not be considered. They couldn't. They had no money. And then secondly, with regards to congestion, my wife and I recently took a short trip up the bicycle, the newest scenic bicycle route in Oregon, the Cascading Rivers route from Estacada to Detroit. And we did part of that road. But what we found was, in order to get over there to Estacada and move up to the ranger station there to begin our ride, we had to either get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, or we had to wait until 9 o'clock, and then we got there at 10, which is what we did. We got there at 10, and then we didn't get home, consequently, because of the traffic coming the other way, until 6 that night. And it's just a nightmare to try to get from one place to another. I don't need to tell you folks about that, but we have to have a transportation package, and I will do anything that you ask me to help pass that, and I wish you well in the future session.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I'm Lucinda Heitz Claybaugh, and I'm from Forest Grove. I work for Hillsborough Air and Water, and I also have been a member of the Union of Concerned Scientists, and they asked me to speak. I do own an electric car, by the way, It's an all-electric vehicle. It looks like a Ford Escort body on the outside, but the license says no gas. And I pay more than double what everybody else gets to pay for that customized license plate that says no gas, which I've had since 1989. But I also pay double and more in my registration and renewal fees. You know, we do pay already, so the gentleman who suggested that we aren't paying is not informed. I'm wanting us to look at convenient public transportation in a modern transportation plan for Oregon, one that offers us safe places to work and walk and bike. A modern transportation system would provide clean air, a safer climate, improved health for all Oregonian communities, and the legislature would spend those public tax dollars investing in advanced transportation technologies that can address climate change and adequately protect public health. The following technologies will help cut emissions from the transportation sector by about one-third of Oregon's total global warming emissions. One, use of electrified passenger cars. Electric vehicles in Oregon produce far fewer global warming emissions than any gas-powered vehicle on the road, of course, and we are continuing to transition to cleaner sources of electricity. As we do more and more, climate advantages of EVs will also increase. Charging an electric vehicle is cheaper than gasoline. I paid $70 for an entire year's transportation with my electric car, for an example. Of course, I have wonderful Forest Grove PUD power, too. Very low-cost electricity. Drivers can save money, though, and that will then create more local jobs and more thriving economy. Electricity prices also are remarkably stable compared with gasoline. Even with higher sticker prices, the total cost of owning an electric vehicle can be much lower than owning a conventional gasoline vehicle. To convert any vehicle to an electric vehicle, you can buy a $25 manual, and for about $5,300, you can convert it yourself. You don't have to be an engineer or a scientist. Policies are needed that will make EVs more available and affordable for all Oregonians. The legislature should consider these following measures to encourage EVs to have good rebates for the purchase and leases of zero-emission and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, and for the conversion of internal combustion vehicles to all electric. That would put a lot of people to work. And people who are used to working on cars today in shops throughout the state, mechanics can be trained pretty easily, actually, to convert their skills over. And that would be a whole new sector of new jobs. And also, specifically, legislature should target programs for low-income, disadvantaged, and also rural populations. Looking at a cleaner freight system for Oregon, diesel-powered engines are the significant source of particulate matter, and they do add to global warming and pollution. Well, let's think about switching diesel to rail. Think of electric. Think of small is beautiful. E.F. Schumacher economics, it works with vehicles too. Smaller freight, all electric transportation vehicles, and then also put things back onto rail. You take that off the highway, you don't have the congestion. You take trucks, triple and double load length vehicles and trucks off the road, you don't have the congestion. That's a big piece of the congestion right now.
Thank you very much.
Senator Beyer, Representative McCown, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you this evening. I'm Pete Truax. I'm the mayor of the city of Forest Grove.
First of all, as past president of the League of Oregon Cities, I'm fully aware of the needs statewide. Our annual conference always has the obligatory presentation on the needs for the entire state, not just one's principality. And there are infrastructure needs statewide, as you well know. Chief among those, the network of bridges, many of which are well into their sixth decade of service and beyond. Here in Washington County, we have our share, some of which are being repaired by Washington County as we speak. So we well know the need for a coordinated statewide program of repair and maintenance on the existing inventory, and if we as a state have the fortitude, the construction of roads and bridges, new roads, new bridges. Here in Washington County, we've embarked on a program that relies on partnerships. Forest Grove, for example, is investing approximately $2 million in projects that, taken collectively, will change Highway 47, State Highway 47, for the better. Currently, ODOT, Washington County, are involved in roundabout construction. You heard about that earlier at the Purdon-Verbort Road intersection. And the new intersection with David Hill Road. An ongoing project is the major overhaul of the intersection of two significant state highways in this portion of the state, State Highway 8, State Highway 47, where turn lanes will be added, approach lanes will be lengthened, and the design will be such that the increasing freight needs will be addressed. South of Forest Grove, also on Highway 47, an intersection that needs attention is the one at Maple and Fern Hill. We had a serious injury accident there just in the last 2 weeks. Since the construction of the new route for 47, this intersection has changed remarkably. Located here now, a National Guard armory, an alternate high school, the school district bus transportation garage, and Fern Hill Wetlands, a key tourist and research facility. I might add that one of the scenic bike paths in Oregon uses this intersection on its way from Rude Bridge Park to the Banks Vernonia Linear Trailhead. This project and a proposed one on Martin Road north from the intersection of Highway 47 will combine with all the other projects I've spoken of to make, again, Highway 47 truly transformative for the freight needs of Northwest Oregon, the movement on the people on the west side of the metro area, and provide for safer access for the region's tourism targets. Forest Grove has long partnered with Metro, Washington County, and the Oregon Department of Transportation to make these roads safer. With the work in progress, we hope to eliminate the chance of fatal accidents, or at least lessen it, such as we witnessed at Purdon-Verbort in 47 a number of years ago, and to address the recent injury accident at the intersection of Fern Hill and Highway 47. I thank you for your time. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mayor Truex. All right, next up we have John Chapman, John Kitchens, and Mickey Blizzard. Welcome. You can go ahead and start.
Thank you. My name is John Chapman. I'm an engineer. I've been in Oregon for 35 years, and I'm committed to get us off oil before I die. The problem we have on the planet is we only got one of them. Environment is the big deal. 40% of our environmental problems are in automobiles and the emissions that they create. There are not a lot of answers around here that I've heard tonight. One of the things I think we should do is keep taxing the gasoline until no one can drive gas cars anymore. I've been a driver of electric cars for 4 years. It's the best drive system on the planet. Now, a lot of people don't know that. That's because people think they're too expensive, because they are. They're expensive because batteries are expensive to make. Until we have enough batteries, both the transportation sector and the electric sector can't change. Some facts you may not know. With the amount of energy it takes to convert one raw gallon of gasoline from raw oil, the energy that that uses, which is in somewhere else and not in our state, we could drive 21 miles on an electric car. That's before you get the gasoline. The second thing I know is that everybody that buys a gas car is worth about $1,500 in tax revenues to the Oregonians. And that's because $6 billion worth of gasoline is exported in dollars out of our state every year. Now, if you just take that small amount and everybody that converts into an electric car, that creates about $6,000 of gasoline people aren't buying, which goes right into your economy, which comes right back at 30%. And you get to tax it, and it's paying for itself. Now, what you don't know is, for every car that's bought, the statistics are this: one new car, four used cars. We have nothing for the used car market. The new cars are expensive. The used cars are expensive, too. I'm asking you to put a $1,500 rebate to somebody buying a used car in Oregon. Let's get people who don't think they can afford these cars to see how good they are. And these are the people that really can't afford it. I know what that's like because I'm one of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Chairs Beyer and McCowan and committee members, my name is Miki Blizzard. I've been a resident of Washington County since 1978 and an advocate for transportation options and more livable communities since 1989. I thank you for this opportunity to testify this evening. I currently serve as the co-chair, along with Hillsborough Mayor Jerry Willey, of the Advisory Committee for Washington County's Transportation Futures Study, which was commissioned and funded by the 2013 legislature to identify the county's long-range transportation strategies and investments. However, this evening I'm speaking just on my own behalf. I'm not representing the committee. I think the project team has done an admirable job of tackling an immense task. I appreciate the funding to be able to do this because the information that comes out of the study, as you know, they're not going to be specific recommendations, but information that will inform plans and projects for many years to come. We all know that transportation investments are about more than just moving people and freight. They provide the infrastructure that define how our communities, our economy, and even our daily lives function. The transportation options we have or don't have affect our daily schedules, our household budgets, our health and safety, our job opportunities, our businesses' bottom lines, and also the quality of labor force they can attract. These options can determine where we live, where we work, where we shop, and where we recreate. And they certainly have an impact on our transportation system. In a very real sense, an effective transportation system is not an end unto itself, but a means to create vibrant communities and a vital economy. That's why it's critical we keep our focus on the big picture, the kind of communities and the economies that we want, and then create the transportation system that will help us get there. The 1990s LUTRAC study demonstrated how more compact land uses supported by transit, walking, and biking precluded the need for a costly bypass freeway through valuable Washington County farmland. A more recent study of 83 planning studies in 18 different metropolitan areas across the country concluded that well-designed compact development could reduce travel demand as measured in VMT by 17% over the continued business as usual and existing auto-dependent trends. I've got a link to this in my testimony, which I'm happy to share with you. So as you work to address transportation problems throughout the state, be they regional congestion problems, local traffic, rural needs, or better freight movement, I urge you to keep your focus on the big picture, the kind of communities and economy we want for our state, for our children, and our grandchildren. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Is John Kitchens, I called, didn't come. Don't see anybody coming, okay. Then the next three are Derek Wheeler, it looks like, Sean Starr, and Anthony Martin. And Derek Wheelon or Wheeler, I'm not clear, Sean Starr and Anthony Martin, please. And Joe Rayhawk.
Hello, my name is Anthony Martin. I'm a Hillsborough resident, and thank you so much for your time and concern. I really appreciate that you're going around the state and asking for concerns from people. I really want to talk about long-term transportation funding because the transportation issue that we face in this state has been well documented. Just as one example, the Association of Oregon Counties pointed out that between 2014 and 2018, they had over $500 million repair backlog. That's just counties. That's not including city or state projects that are necessary. So we know that this is an issue. I'm not here to talk about building roads or areas of problems for this community, which a lot of people have done a great job of pointing out. I am advocating for a dedicated long-term funding source for transportation. Some ideas for this are increasing the gas tax, indexing the gas tax for inflation, and re-examining the weight mile tax to potentially take on more than it currently does. I think that we need a long-term proposal that will last beyond this biennium or even 5 years because this is a problem that will not go away. We need something that works for all modes and regions. We need something that works for people in Medford, in rural areas, and the Portland Metro. And I really just hope that we can try and create a package that has the long-term funding in mind. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rahoff, we do have your written testimony. It will become part of the record, so.
I'll cover it very quickly. Basically, what I want to do is present the idea that there's some larger issues even than roads that we need to be concerned about, which is basically that due to underinvestment in roads, local roads, and schools, Washington County is no longer competitive at getting high-tech jobs.
I'm sorry. Could you put your name on the record, please?
Oh, my name is Joe Rahoff. Do you need the address as well? Okay. Due to underinvestment in roads and schools for 30 years, Washington County is no longer competitive at getting high-tech companies to move here. Indeed, there has not been a single new high-tech company moving here since 1994 without occupying a new building or an existing building or getting incredible tax breaks. As a result, and in fact, high-tech employment in the county is at pre-2000 levels. This is due to the roads and schools and because of global economic conditions. But we are literally at 1997 levels. There has been no net new job creation, high-tech job creation in this county or in the state since before 2000. This is a very serious problem in that we can't get these kind of people. We are in a death spiral. Specifically, what I want to do is mention the fact that I think the West Side Bypass is a really bad idea. I doubt it will help much with the critical problems, which is the congestion going into the city from here. Or congestion on the streets. It is likely to be, the only real result is to open the area out there for new homes, which are going to end up making the congestion problem still worse. And indeed, most of the things I've seen for West Side Bypass are to get industrial traffic off the freeways at rush hour, which is the only time it matters. It will do very little to offload the rush hour conditions because they're primarily due to commuters. Again, because we are not, three key points at the bottom of the first page, because we are not competitive, it is not reasonable to assume growth of industries in Washington County or the state that need large roads such as the West Side Bypass. The only reliable result is going to open up more land for more housing. We need to improve the educational quality of our people and the quality of life as reflected by proper functioning of the basic road systems. I mentioned on page two a major trend, which is the young people are moving into the cities and away from the suburbs. This is happening nationally. It is happening for us because of the congestion of the Sunset Highway. A very interesting thing is that there's been no new venture capital funded high-tech startups since pre-2008. They are all downtown. They are mostly software companies. They're mostly in an area where the people can live an urban lifestyle or their kids can go to Lincoln High School, which is the best public high school. They are avoiding Washington County. I'm just literally going to skip ahead. I have no idea how much time I'm supposed to have. In essence, because of the poor schools and poor roads, very few high-tech companies are going to move here. And couple that with the problem that we have a huge deficit. We need to build a new water pipe soon, which is going to cost $1 billion. Our current road deficit is $3.5 billion, and the schools can be estimated at $1.3 billion. And they're going to get worse. I've provided you a spreadsheet that shows how the cost will happen for the planned 18,000 homes that Washington County is doing in large projects. I also discussed the fact that we did not need to give SIP to Intel because in the short run they can't move. But there are signs that they will move as soon as the current plant becomes obsolete in 5 to 8 years. So because of poor education, they cannot recruit new engineers because new engineers want good schools for their kids. It's very likely that Intel will move 5 to 8 years. They have done similar things in Arizona, New Mexico, and Puerto Rico, and at least one South American country. They had a fab there for 5 to 10 years, and when it got obsolete, they abandoned it and the community. It is a good business decision for them, and it trumps anything having to do with what happens to the community. But again, I gave you the analysis of why they're likely to leave. We need to build a $1 billion pipeline. How are we gonna fund that to have the water needed for new homes? And they're already charging the current existing water customers $12.5 million more a year to accumulate $125 million within 10 years. That's only 1/8 of the money. Where's it going to come from? It is easy to see that new companies and existing people are going to be the ones to pay it if we have to build that. Intel's D1X fabs use the equivalent of between 25,000 and 50,000 homes. We were supposed to be competing for another fab from some other company referred to it as Azalea. It was absurd. If that fab had come here, we would
instantly. Can I ask you to sum up, please?
Yes, sir. Finally, I give you an analysis of the Sunset Highway rush hour, and that the problems are due to what happens east of the tunnel, the city roads and the exit ramps, and the way the conditions occur. They're not on the highways, and they're not part of the state jurisdiction. They're mostly City of Portland jurisdiction problems, and it is not reasonable to think they can be fixed by anything. Finally, I give you a map from a diagram from Metro that shows where people who live in the three counties go to work. It's a really good first start to understand what the traffic flows are here in this county or in this area, and it should always be kept in the back of your heads as you do planning. So thank you for your time. I'm sorry if I was a little disorganized, but.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the testimony. We've got it in the record. All right, let's see. Let me try one more time. Derek Wheeler, or Sean Starr, don't see you. That's the end of the signups. Is there anybody else who did not sign up who wishes to testify? Seeing no one, well, thank you very much. We've ran our full 2 hours. A lot of good testimony. We appreciate it. We'll take that under advisement along with the other 9 meetings and see what we can come up with in 2017. Thank you. And good night.
Good job. Finish the meeting minute after.